This meeting to order, please. The meeting is scheduled from 4 to 7. I want to get one thing right and start them on time each day, and hopefully we end at 7. Thank you all for coming. We have a few things that we need to straighten out at the beginning, and there are some things that I need to say to you so that my sense is that we can make this work. Number one, I would request that everyone please raise their hand, and I will do my very best to recognize you in the order that you get your hand up. Kathy will help me, and if some of you do not get recognized in the exact order, I apologize right now, but I will do my very best to keep that going. But I'm going to have to say that it works a whole lot better if I'm able to recognize you with your hand up and not people not generally talking out without being recognized. I think it'll make it run a bit more smoothly. Secondly, we have tomorrow, all of you have on your desk or somewhere nearby your desk, there's a legislature meeting tomorrow night at 7 p.m. One item, accepting the Federal Aviation Administration grant to conduct a wildlife assessment at the airport. And we're going to do that at 7 o'clock at the end of the meeting tomorrow night. A third thing, and I will remind you at the end of the meeting that each one of you who has the exit and entrance card with you, you need to hold it up to the machine on the way out the back door because they've had electronic problems and it needs to get reprogrammed back into the machine. So please do that. Peter, you had your hand up.
Yeah, that was just a field test to put my hand up.
But you also need to talk into the microphone, Peter.
While I have the floor, is it my understanding that this meeting at 7 o'clock will be minutes long? Is that correct?
Well, I don't predict the length of meetings, knowing because I've been here 5 years, and it's up to you all how long the meeting is. All right, and I won't chair the meeting. I don't think Monica will. So I will remind you at the end of this to hold up your card as you're exiting the building so that we can get your card reprogrammed back into the system. Let me just say, we are here for the first of many meetings, and we are hoping at the end of all this that we can come out with a budget for the year 2011 in Tompkins County. It only works when we have input from all of you, and we will attempt to get all of that because everyone here has someone they represent, some area they represent, and clearly people have talked to them over time, and they are here voting for those people in their best interest, and that's all we're really trying to do here. I look forward to all of this. I know it can be long and sometimes tense. I'm hoping that we can get through this and we'll all still talk to each other at the end of it, at least as much as we are now. So, Kevin, as far as I'm concerned, I will give it over to Joe and Kevin and whoever for a very short, if you look at your schedule, a very short little introduction. So I think, Joe, you're first, or Kevin?
I'm going to turn it right over to Kevin.
All right, go ahead.
All right, just a quick overview. There are 121 over-target requests, three of which are administrative negative OTRs. This is a little different than we've seen in the past. In your budget book, there's a tab called OTR, or over-target requests, and in there you'll find throughout, specifically assigned counsel, youth services, and in the health department, where you'll find an administrative negative OTR. Two of those are cuts to the target, and again, then there's another OTR right after that that is a request to put it back into the budget, and then there's one reduction in the requested mandate increase, and that's the assigned counsel. They had projected a $200,000 increase. Joe has recommended, or the county administrator has recommended, only $100,000 be increased to that mandate. So Jim just mentioned there's a lot of evenings of presentations, and then actually there's seven of them, and we have a public forum on the 27th. There's 4 days of voting, 2 days of revisits if needed. I was hoping this thing would work, but
no money for batteries.
Batteries are out of the budget this year. So, I'm sorry, Pat.
Is this how we're going to do this? That I raise my hand and now to ask questions.
That's it.
Okay.
Go ahead.
Okay, thank you. There, back on that previous one, there was a, I still don't understand what that means. One reduction in requested mandate increase. How can
go ahead, Joe?
Yeah.
When we do the draft budget, we make assumptions about mandated costs, and we build that into our target. And when we built the targets for 2011, we made certain assumptions about the assigned counsel program, which is a mandated service. We assumed it would be at a certain level. When the budget request came in from assigned counsel, it was up $200,000 over where we had put the target estimate. And after talking to Julia and to Wes, I decided that that $200,000 was too aggressive and that I reduced that increase to a $100,000 increase. It's still up, but it's not up by as much as the department had recommended.
Okay. Thank you.
Martha.
And just to be clear, if Julia's right and Joe's not so right next year, then we still have to pay that. It'll come out of contingency, In general, that's what happens, but it's a way of being sort of fine-tuning what the mandates are that we project.
Peter.
Yeah, I may be the only one that doesn't know the answer to this question, but I'm going to ask it anyway.
A little bit
of history here. We voted on a whatever it was, 6.9% cut in the budget or something like
5%.
That. 5%. And then that got raised to something else. Is that correct?
No, it didn't get raised. We said make it a target of 5%, and then the county administrator had to go deal with department heads. And, Joe, you can answer that question.
Yeah, you set a 5% tax levy goal.
Right.
Don't raise taxes more than 5%. That was the goal.
Right.
From there came the amount we had to cut from target spending. Now, originally, I think what you're recalling, Peter, is at the budget retreat, we thought that would require about a 5% cut of spending. By the time it got to you for approval and the departments for implementation, that had grown to 6.9% across the board. The reason for that was when we looked at the fringe benefit costs, our original projections assumed that 70% of fringe benefits are local costs. The rest of it's reimbursed. In fact, when we looked at the actual numbers, that number was more like 80% local. And that caused the adjustment in the expenditure targets. That's what lifted it from 5% to 6.9%.
Okay, so now let me follow on with the rest of my question. So all the departments presented you with a budget that had a 6.9% cut.
Yes.
And then you went and talked to the departments, and what happened in those discussions? Was it just a discussion about where the 6.9% would come from, or did you actually change those numbers for different departments? Or are these three things are the only changes in the 6.9%? Is that correct? Or
not quite.
Okay.
A couple things happened. Yeah, the discussions do focus on the over-target requests. However, we do talk about what's under the target as well. And really, my questions were, you know, what is the effect of not funding the OTRs? How many people are affected by all those kinds of things? Really focused on the OTRs. When it ended, the budget that you have in front of you does two things. One, where we were able to find additional resources that we didn't have early on, we then use those resources to fund some of those OTRs. So that's one basket of changes in this budget. You'll find that some departments had asked for, it was mostly, restorations of spending that was cut under the 6.9%. And in some cases, we found resources to do that.
Uh-huh.
That's number one. Number two is there are a few areas where I actually reached under the target. And I've recommended that we make reductions in programs, in spending, within a department's target. So the example might be the home health agency, where I've said we need to get that to break even by mid-year. Currently, it has a deficit of about $400,000 a year. So the department said, you don't need to do that. We can hit our target and still run the operation where we're currently doing. I then imposed a decision that's been, it's now in the form of a recommendation to you, to in fact try to hit break even by mid-year. So I made that cut unilaterally within target. That happened in that area in health and in two areas in youth that I described as a part of the presentation, youth development programs and the apprenticeship.
Is that the second
program.
Bullet you're talking about now?
And that's the second bullet. So okay. The second bullet says there are three, and the only way we can adjust this budget is through basically, in what it says, a negative OTR, okay. A minus OTR. So the two cuts in that sub-bullet, the two cuts referred to there, are... one is the home health agency and the health department. That's one. The second is a consolidated negative OTR, the two youth programs. The second sub-bullet is the one that Kevin explained was the assigned counsel program, where I've made the cut that the department is okay with that cut, so that there's not a restoration that's sought there.
Okay, thank you. That's very helpful.
Can I add one more thing?
Sure.
We did allow the departments, where we made those unilateral cuts, we did allow the department to submit another OTR asking for the restoration of that. So in this document, you'll see the cut that I've made and a corresponding departmental request to restore funding to avoid that cut.
But that will appear to us. Isn't that what an OTR request is?
Yes.
Yes. So you'll see the negative OTR that came from my office, and you'll see a corresponding OTR from the department to put that money back.
Okay.
That came on top of the original 119 OTRs that came through our door
gotcha.
First.
Okay, thank you very much.
And when they, for those departments that put in subsequent OTRs in response to your negative ones, is that OTR prioritized in the original list?
Yes. It's the first one, right after the administration's OTR.
Okay.
Go ahead, Kevin.
Okay.
Carol?
I have a very technical question about the replacement pages. Some of them have numbers at the top and the bottom. I assume we're using the numbers at
yes.
the bottom.
Yes. I was going to, that's this slide right here. I was going to explain that. So on your desk, you have a stack of TAN pages. They're replacement pages to the current document. Any future changes will be in this TAN color. What is going on there? You have that first set of TAN is 83 through 88 of 106. That is in the OT over target request tab. And then everything below that goes under the 2011 budget tab. And it's numbers 121 through 300 and further down. Does that address your question, Carol?
Yes, there's one set that has a budget request book. They all say page 230 at the top.
That's referring to where you would find that department in the budget book. So I think you're looking at requested as that's out of the over target request book,
yep.
And it's referring to where you would find that in the budget book.
I see. Thank you.
Yes.
Good.
Okay. And just so you know, all of these changes that you see in here are simple FTE mistakes that happened. There's no dollar amount changes here. It was a matter of like a 0.2 that changed to a 0.48 or a 0.52 that was actually a 0.48. A few of these small things that were addressed by departments to me. So the schedule, which is the white sheet I also handed out today, looking across it, this kind of, I figured, would help explain what's going on and how we're going to do this. So administrative overview, we've talked about OTR's number. We have three of them, essentially, from administration, not for administration's budget, but for the overall budget. That's OTRs 15, 16, and 17. And so the OTR report pages, that's the over target request tab. In that section, they're on page 2, 127. You can find them. And then if you're looking in the line item budget, which is the 2011 budget tab and all the letters beyond that, that's 13, 29, and 95. Again, all of these updates that I've handed out today are also on the web currently. So if the public's interested in looking at this, all of this information is on the web. And then the last part is how long we should take, and I'm already over by 4 minutes. So, and then again, you can see the number of OTRs each department has coming to you. So when they come to present, you'll see there are several tonight that don't have OTRs. Mostly I did this for simplicity, to get kind of used to the system. I think most of them will be coming to just talk about their programs. And, of course, you have your program impact assessment forms to help guide you through those. But I did send out PowerPoint templates to all departments and agencies. We provided them. They're not required. Most of them focused on their total expenditures, their local share cost for 2010-2011, and then their OTR requested versus recommended. So you should be able to, you know, as you see departments with OTRs coming to the table, you should be able to find those slides within their PowerPoints help if they choose to use them.
Mike has his hand up first. Go ahead, Mike.
I'm just kind of concerned about newspeak here, and this negative over target. Seems like in the past we just called them reductions in target. I just wonder if it's going to confuse the public.
Or us.
All right. Frank?
Kevin, back to the administrative overview, where it says OTR report pages 2, 127.
They correspond with the numbers. I'm sorry.
Let me ask the question. Excuse me. That they appear again. One is assigned counsel, one is health, and one is the other one. Those three, why did administration select those three to put under administrative overview as opposed to any of the other ones that are in that column?
Those are the negative OTRs.
Okay.
So that's why those are located there as well.
It's just a
highlighting where they are found within their departments too. And then of course I've provided copies of each of each day. I'll bring copies of the PowerPoint. If you don't want hard copies, let me know. I will have them as PDFs as well. And of course, I am working on and will hopefully have to you tomorrow the updated 2011. Numbers from the program assessment and impact assessment forms. Any questions? Okay. Thank you.
Go ahead, Joe.
Just one little tiny note. We were going to try to do some changes to the cosmetics of the budget this year. With all the other things that were going on, we didn't get to that. We made one change that you'll note, and that is everything is in alphabetical order. So it used to be by committee, and I think alpha within committee. You're going to see in this budget that everything is in alphabetical order by department, tabbed, so that you should be able to find those easily. So that's the only really change in the cosmetics of the document this year that you should be aware of.
Thank you. It's easier.
I hope so.
Any other questions for Joe or Kevin? Mike? STAM. TCAD? You are next. Michael has passed one of these out to all of you on your desk, and he will refer to it at some point. Yes?
sorry, before we get into Mike, in the past we, you don't have to go away, but I just want to know if we're, if we've scheduled, in the past we've had a sort of extensive go over of the orange pages, an explanation of those. Are we going to do that at some point?
We could, or we could do it as tomorrow, part of my presentation, which is toward the end of the month.
Thank you.
Yeah, that's that general revenue, so the kind of the front pages,
yeah,
of the book.
Yes. It was helpful to me in the past.
Which is when, Joe?
In the first couple of years.
I think I'm on the September 30th.
Yeah, administration is also,
yeah,
the capital program. You're on at 4 o'clock.
Yeah.
Maybe it's just that old habits die hard. But I,
yes, you had a question?
Sorry.
Go
that
ahead.
That it's a good overview. I you know, I kind of like having that towards the beginning of this process.
All right, we'll fit that in. If not, no, what? Do you want to do it? Do you want to do it? No. If not today, we'll do it tomorrow. All right?
Tomorrow's,
would that work
better? Yeah.
Fine. Again, take two. Mike Stamm.
Well, I'm honored to be the first one and to precede the SBCA. Never want to follow them. You're 10 minutes behind schedule. Hopefully I can help you catch up. As was mentioned, we handed out copies of our annual report. Very recently, I made a very deep...
I'm sorry, Michael, but it would be really helpful to me if I knew what page we were on.
I have no page.
It's
no
on
idea
the
page
sheet,
on.
Pat. 275. Your schedule sheet, see it right there in front of you?
Yeah.
Page 275, line item budget starting page.
Okay, thank you.
Okay. Take three.
Okay, my opening joke's already been ruined.
But what are you going to do?
We handed out copies of our annual report. I made a very detailed presentation of what TCAD does at a recent PDEC committee meeting. I thought that was very interesting. I just want to focus on a couple things today. One of them is our funding. For years, and TCAD was founded in 1964, our budget was a very balanced one that received revenues from three basic sources. One-third from membership, that's investment from local employers, one-third from government, and one-third fee-based income. Back in around 1997, the county asked us, TCAD, to hire somebody to take the lead in creating and implementing an economic development strategy. So that increased our budget. And then a couple years ago, the county asked us to take over or hire somebody to manage the Empire Zone. So at the county's request, over the last few years, our staff has gone from three people to five people. I think it was a great idea, and we've done good things with those people. At the same time, the county's contribution has decreased from about $78,000 down to what's proposed for 2011, $8,728. I think that's the right amount. And the reason that that's okay and acceptable is that there's a pretty big fund balance at the Industrial Development Agency, one of the programs that we manage, and that was the reasoning and the logic behind county leadership's ability to decrease support for TCAD, because they knew that the IDA had a large fund balance that could support economic development. And right now, with that fund balance, we have enough to support TCAD for 2011 and 2012, and we're already growing revenues for 2013. And that's primarily because of past work we did through the IDA and your creation of a new local development corporation that allows us to once again provide services to not-for-profits through issuance of taxes and bonds. So we're back in that business. We recently closed on a project, about $15 million to Cayuga Medical Center. We just got an application from Ithaca College, so hopefully we'll be able to build up that fund balance. But I wanted to give you a sense of what our revenue model had been, why it had changed, and why we've survived that change. And it's basically because of all the fee-based income that has been generated by the projects we bring to the IDA and the Local Development Corporation, both of which we manage. The other thing I wanted to focus on today is all we do. And over the years, we've created initiatives based on feedback we've got from local employers. We created the Air Service Board, which is we created the Air Service Task Force, which is now the Air Service Board, Finger Lakes Entrepreneurs Forum, which we're taking back management of, Cougar Venture Fund, which will soon be launching its fourth fund, the Workforce Development Board, which is now the Workforce Investment Board. Some of those we have spun off into very separate entities, and they're very successful as standalone entities. We currently manage the Industrial Development Agency. We still manage the Empire Zone program, even though it's disappeared as far as new companies gaining entry into the zone. We still have to work with dozens and dozens of companies that are zone certified and will be getting benefits for near to a decade. We manage the new County Development Corporation. We manage several revolving loan funds very creatively, where we're taking equity positions in some of the high-tech companies we invest in. Again, we still manage the creation and implementation of an economic development strategy. We just finished up creating, in conjunction with the Workforce Investment Board, a workforce development strategy. We created sewer water infrastructure study. We manage tourism capital grants. And then we do all the very basic things that economic development agencies do, and that's help local entrepreneurs and local companies gain access to local, regional, state, and federal economic development programs. So for a small investment, you are getting a phenomenal return on your investment, and we can support that with jobs data, salary data. We have all that. Some of it's outlined in our annual report. So with that, I'd love to answer any questions or comments you might have.
Julie, then Mike, then Carol.
Michael, the budget book did not ask you for what the total budget is or how many staff you have, but I'm going to ask that if you have that at your fingertips.
Well, I certainly know how many staff I have. That's five. Our current budget is about $560,000, so that's for 2010. 2011, our budget won't be approved by our board until December, but typically 2, 3, 4% increase. But last year we did cut our budget because we cut benefits to staff, and that will be something considered again.
So in the text that you supplied in here, you give the IDA support for 2010 as $364,000 plus, and the county gives you 10 or less. So the rest comes from fees?
No, the rest of the revenues to support our budget comes from membership income.
Ah.
So many employers in the community invest in economic development by supporting TCAD. In the old days, with our old model, that was one-third. Now it's about $140,000. But throughout the recession, it stayed stable, which is good. In fact, we had one major company, BorgWarner, recently dramatically increased their investment in TCAD. So we've got local government, membership income through local employers, including not-for-profit and for-profit businesses, and fee-based income, mostly of which is the IDA, but there's some other fee-based income.
Okay, thanks.
Frank? I'm sorry, Mike.
Jim, I wanted to ask you a procedural question first, and then I want to talk to Mike, ask Mike a question. But how do you see what we're doing at this point? Are we just listening to the department?
Listening question time.
So and you don't want us to, quote-unquote, grandstand or take positions on their particular budgets or anything.
No.
You just want more factual kind of questions?
I want I want a presentation and then questions from all of you. Discussion is at a later time in the voting part of this whole process.
All right. So so if I could then, Mike, could you tell us where or at what level the county used to support TCAD?
Yes. When we had a staff of three, and before the county over several years asked us to increase to four and then five, the county's investment in TCAD was about $77,000.
I just think that's a pretty important thing, how far that's come down. And at some point, we might want to look at what other counties do. Thank you.
And Carol, we have that information. We did a survey of how other counties support their economic development organizations.
Carol.
Yeah, I think my questions might help to answer some of Mike's. We made the transition you mentioned to supporting TCAD by designating you as the agency that would administer and receive fees from the administration of the IDA bonding authority, and that sunset, and now we've designated you as the designate for the fees from the new TCDC Development Corporation. Can you talk, and as I recall when we talked about a year ago, there was a certain amount of funding that you were holding in abeyance and counting on being able to use over a certain number of years from the earlier entity, and now you'll have a funding stream from the later entity. Can you share anything about sort of how much you have in the fund from before and how much you're anticipating, at what rate you're anticipating, and how much you're anticipating for 2011 and beyond?
Sure. With the combination of the fund balance that remains under the control of the Industrial Development Agency and the new but growing fund balance at the new Development Corporation, at the current burn rate of $365,000, there's enough funds to support TCAD at that level for 2011 and 2012, and it's starting to build up, projecting out into 2013. That's under the assumption that TCAD stays at a staff of five with a well-controlled budget and that other sources of income remain relatively stable. I'll give an example. The state used to provide funding for our Empire Zone coordinator in the $33,000 range. They've pulled that, even though all the work, if not more, still has to be done.
Follow-up? How do you expect, or what are you projecting for your budget for fees from the TCDC for 2011 and 2012? How long does it take to ramp that up, and what are you projecting?
I think I can only answer that in the way that I just did, that we right now we're getting $365,000 from the IDA, and with the remaining fund balance at the IDA plus new revenues coming into the Development Corp, there's enough to get us through 2011 and 12. So that's $720,000, and then there's already a little bit building beyond that.
Thanks.
Does that answer?
Oh. Go ahead, Frank.
Mike, there's a percentage that you get from the Tourism Board for administering, I think it's some of the capital development.
Tourism Capital Grants Program.
Where is that? How is that accounted for?
We consider that fee-based income.
Fee-based income.
Right.
So
we provide a service to an entity, in this case the county, and we're receive a fee in exchange for that.
So that doesn't appear on page two, our page 275, as any income at all. It's a wash.
I've never seen your page 275, but possibly.
You haven't.
Huh? Yeah.
275 only has your
your request that they're not anything else. Because that's our
Is there
I would
another,
need 20 minutes to understand page 275.
Is there another page?
Yes.
Is there someplace else that would appear in here?
Yes.
Joe?
If you look at page 280, that's the tourism budget, and their allocation is within one. I'm looking for the specific line item here. I think it is a subset of tourism capital grants, the 171,328. I think the allocation to TCAT is in there.
So I'm not sure what your question is, but in TCAD's internal revenue pie, those funds show up as fee-based income, not government and not membership.
Okay. Thank you.
Peter.
Could you explain to me why it is that private corporations give money to this organization? Is it out of a general sense of community service, or do they receive some direct benefits for doing that?
Oh, it's very much like a United Way model. They don't expect any direct services in return. Sometimes that happens, but it's very much that they want to be in a community with a strong economy. And as I ran off in kind of a laundry list, they're concerned about air service. We created an air service board. They want places to network. We created the Finger Lakes Entrepreneurs Forum. So it's not in exchange for any direct services. It's not a pay-to-play kind of operation. It's very much them investing in the health of the community.
Okay, thank you.
Martha.
Michael, you were doing, for a little while, I remember you talking about working with NYSERDA to help interpret NYSERDA grants to businesses, help businesses access that money. Are you still doing that? I haven't heard much about it in a while.
And actually, with that program, the economic development agencies that did it were supposed to get a fee, but NYSERDA took that out at the very last moment. So we're doing our best to try to decipher NYSERDA programs so they can be used by local businesses. So when we meet with businesses, that's one of the things that's on our agenda with the PNC project, for example, Cortland Produce, buying Ithaca Produce. We're talking to them and connecting with them with the right person within NYSERDA. So every project we do, every entrepreneur or company contact we have, NYSERDA, because they have so much money, is one of the things we talk about.
Thank you.
Will.
Thank you. Michael, I'm very glad that a new income stream has started, and I hope that eliminates the need to have more resources come in directly from the county. I am curious, in terms of this this transitional period, what you are doing in terms of belt tightening and also what's been happening with salaries at TCAD.
I don't have off the top of my head historical information on salaries. One of the things we've done is cut benefits. So we've increased the amount of employee contribution to health care. Salaries are based on performance. So we have an HR committee that reviews employee performance and makes decisions based on that. For 2011, our budget committee will create a dollar amount, and then it's up to myself and the HR committee to distribute those funds to staff based on performance.
Am I right, not right that in 2010 salaries did go up?
Oh, yes, they did.
And do you have any sense of how much?
I think it varied, and I think it was in the 2 to 3% range.
Anyone else? Joe.
I just want to put a punctuation mark on Frank's question about how much TCAD gets from the tourism program. In the 2011 proposed budget that's gone through PDEQ, that amount would be $17,132. That's the maximum amount that they would be paid for managing those capital grants. And that's based on volume and rate and so forth. So it's not a retainer. It's based on hours actually spent on these projects. So it's 17,132, and it is in the tourism budget in the line item I described earlier.
And Martha Armstrong in our office manages that, and she bills the county based on an hourly basis. So it's not like a dollar amount per project. It is by hour.
But is it maxed out or is it certain up?
Brian is next, and then I'll come back to you. Go ahead, Brian.
Just a real quick question, Michael. Your budget request or what we've deemed is appropriate for you has gone from 9,300 to 8,700. I assume that equals the 6.9% target.
If we did the math right, it should.
Okay, I didn't do it, but I'm assuming you're not asking for any more, and you're not asking us. We only fund you less than 2% of mm-hmm. your total budget. Okay. All right. Thanks.
Thank you, Brian. Frank.
Yeah, on the fee-based income line, particularly that tourism one, is that maxed out at a certain? We budget a certain amount of that through through the tourism board, and some of it goes to CAP, some of it goes to TCAD, and some of it goes to the chamber. Those were the three entities that received it. But isn't it a fixed dollar amount that they can charge against? It's not an ever increasing dollar amount.
No, they'd have to adjust the if they found that there was such a volume of projects they needed to come back and increase that amount, they'd have to come for a budget adjustment. To change that.
Go ahead, Mom.
At the IDA on Friday, we talked a little bit about the Local Development Corporation and whispers in Albany about some people not liking these LDCs as showing up as an end run around the civic facilities issue. Could you give us, get your crystal ball out? Do you think that's something to really be concerned about? I mean, it's sort of like a huge sigh of relief because we have that income being generated again. Is that something that we need to worry about?
I think you need to worry about everything and anything Albany does. Crystal ball is kind of murky there, but we do know that there is pressure on Albany from groups to pull the plug on these local development corporations' ability to issue tax-exempt bonds for not-for-profits or to attach requirements to them that would make it not feasible for them to come to the local development corporations. That, of course, would drive all that traffic to the dormitory authority, which is a big creature of state government, which the state uses to generate revenues for themselves. So that would result in, for example, Family and Children's Services project we did. They'd have to go to the dormitory authority. The administrative fees, the time would just skyrocket. So that would hurt our local not-for-profit businesses. But it's always a chance.
Frank.
Yeah, in the same vein, Mike, a couple of months back, the state was trying to tag you for a fee.
Mm-hmm.
How does that stand?
The state passed in their last budget, not the one that was recently passed, an administrative fee applied to IDA's revenues under the guise that the state was providing valuable services to IDAs, and this would cover the costs of providing those valuable services. The value we get out of those services is probably less than zero. We collectively, IDAs, hired an attorney, sued the state. The state, I think Attorney General, convinced the state administration to wipe out that, but it's still in the law and it could come back.
It was about $35,000, if I remember.
For us, it was about $35,000.
Thanks.
Let me ask, are these questions about the $8,700?
Well, it could influence. If he's got to pay a fee, that he hadn't expected due to the states coming up with new ways to tag everybody, that could affect his funding from any other source, including ours.
I thought I had an hour.
He started late, Jim.
Well, I'll make a comment at the end of this, all right? Go ahead.
Okay, I was just going to suggest that maybe we could shorten this in the future. The questions that are coming up about the 8,000 that we are reflecting on now and the 360,000 that, you know, sort of come by way of being part of the Tompkins County's economic development strategy, mm-hmm. We don't have a sense that there's another forum to discuss. So not now, but maybe you could suggest, and you and Martha could, or Jim, whatever, could work out some forum by which you come every year to us to talk about the economic development strategy might help us.
We'd love to do that. It'd be great.
I think that's a great idea.
Am I wrong here, or wouldn't that come under the PDAC committee somehow?
Jim, I should have suggested at the very start of the meeting that when we learn things from asking questions or discussions such as is going on now that are not in the budget book, that may be of interest to absent members or may be things that we would like to refer to in our thinking about our votes on the budget, it would be really nice if the new information could be reflected in this expanded budget committee meeting minutes. And I make that request.
We'll take it into consideration, I'm sure. Let me just say, I think many of these questions they're all good questions, but there were many questions that I don't think are correct for this particular forum. They're more correct either individually with Mike or in the PDAC committee if, in fact, that group gets together and talks about the thing that people were talking about. So, but at any rate, yeah, Julie, we will certainly do our best because, as you well know, we do have discussions about the minutes all the time, so we'll do our very best. Any other questions for Mike?
Thank you, and I urge you to support the SPCA.
Thank you, Mike. Page 8 in your white book, after the tab AB, page 8, and animal control, Abigail Smith, coming to the microphone.
Afternoon, everyone. I'm here to talk about the SPCA's cat spay-neuter vaccination program, which the county has graciously funded for the past 2 years. We're hoping to continue this collaboration for 2011. The spay-neuter vaccination program is truly a community collaboration. We serve about 1,200 cats each year, and the program is funded by three partners. The SPCA does fundraising. We have your support. And the individuals that access the program pay fees for the services to the level that they're able. And that accounts for about a third of what keeps the program going. We serve two populations. The first is for income-qualified residents who are looking to get their animals spayed or neutered and also vaccinated, but who may not be able to access traditional veterinary care in our community. And the other population that we serve are residents who have taken a concern and interest in dealing with approaching the free-roaming cat population that we have in Tompkins County. I've never been able to count them all, but there's a lot of them. So for the first population, the low or no-cost spay-neuter vaccination, residents do apply, and we do match state income guidelines to receive services. So we are really reaching a public that otherwise would not be able to get veterinary care. We have clinics weekly. We do a high-volume, high-quality surgery there, and we work with a not-for-profit called Shelter Outreach Services. SOS is a really great program that goes to other humane organizations around, I'd probably say, a five-county area to do high-volume spay-neuters for lots of other shelters and for other public programs. The people bring their animals in, and we do the surgery, we do vaccines, and then they pick them up that same day, so there are no boarding costs associated with it. It's a very, very efficient way to do 35 or 40 surgeries a day. The other population is the Trap, Neuter, Vaccinate, and Return, TNR program, and that is for unowned cats. There are a half a dozen names for them. I like to call them free-roaming because they do roam freely, which is permitted by New York state law, parenthetically. They are also known as feral cats, and lately lots of people are calling them community cats. So the way that works is that a community member would borrow a trap from the SPCA. They would trap the cat and transport it to our shelter so that on the day of surgery. We would do the surgery, vaccinate against rabies, and then do an ear tip. It's the universal sign for I am fixed, don't trap me again, is a notch missing off of the left ear of the cat. And then the cat gets picked up and brought back to its habitat where it will no longer breed. So the reason why TNR is such an important component to this program and to any community solution to cat overpopulation is that if people trap these cats and bring them to the shelter, they're not cats that we can adopt out. These are not house pets. I'm sure you've probably all had interactions with these animals. And so the TNR program really is the only viable solution. It obviously prevents more kittens from being born. Over time, it will serve to stabilize the population of free-roaming cats, and ultimately, over a long amount of time, it will eventually diminish the population that exists. And then, of course, we do vaccinate every animal, and that does help to prevent the spread of rabies. Also, I think for some people, the most important benefit is that it does reduce some annoying behaviors. So neutered males aren't going to mark up your whole yard and your shed and your garden, and maybe you won't smell them anymore. And spayed females don't come into heat, and so you hear fewer howls and cat fights during mating season, which these days is lasting about 8 months. So overall, this program has really been working in its present form for, this is our third year. 3 years ago, the program only did about 400 cats. We've tripled that number with your support. And it really is a proactive and responsible approach to the overpopulation problem. It does serve income-qualified residents who otherwise absolutely would not be able to get their cats spayed or neutered. And it really does enrich the effort to enforce state-mandated rabies vaccination for cats. So just so I can stay, there's my standard county slide. And with that, I'd just like to thank you for your continued support.
Any questions? Thank you very
much.
So close.
This is the first time I ever even heard of this issue about feral cats. Is that considered a major nuisance, a minor nuisance, and why is it that they can't be adopted?
Because they live outside. They're not socialized to humans, and so you can't handle them. They have to be trapped, and from the trap they go, you know, if they get sedated for surgery, and then they go out of the trap, and they go back in the trap, and then you open the trap, and off they go. They're not friendly, and if you try to approach them, they'll either run away, or if you try to touch them, they'll scratch you. So they're not pets. They're not pets. But there are enough cats outside that continue to breed and breed and breed and breed, and I can tell you that right now I have about 237 kittens as a result of unaltered animals. And lots of the kittens are coming from this free-roaming population. They get born, and if they come into the shelter within, you know, 2 weeks, we can socialize them, take them out of that environment. So what I'm trying to do is stop that from happening. And to answer the first part of your question, it is definitely a national problem. There are national organizations, Alley Cat Allies and CommunityCats.org, that are working to try to foster the growth of these kinds of programs.
And are we required by state law to have such a program?
No, there's no state requirement that says you have a spay-neuter program. The law does require that you vaccinate cats, and this is one way to reach a population that isn't getting vaccinated.
Okay, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Julie.
I just wanted the agency context question. Mm-hmm. Your total budget and your total staff, and how many staff are devoted to this, if you can do that.
Sure. Total agency budget is $1.4 million. This program's budget is $100,000. I have one full-time equivalent dedicated to this program. That's about three-quarter time vet tech support for the day of surgery every week, and then the rest of it's administrative to administer the program, you know, accept, approve, mail applications and such. On the SPCA staff as a whole, we have, it varies seasonally, but generally we have 28 to 30 full-time equivalents. Yep.
Thank you. I think this is a great program.
And thank you.
Anyone else? Thank you very much.
All right.
Next on the agenda is the district attorney, page 73 in your C288 here, I believe.
Good afternoon. My name is Dan Johnson. Excuse me. I'm an assistant district attorney, and clearly I'm not Gwen Wilkinson. She asked that I be here today, and so I am. The first thing I'd like to say is I can't believe I got stuck following the lady who can give away cats. So I can't make any such promises. I know you're all familiar with our office. Nonetheless, we've got the slide up there which lays out essentially who we are and what we do. As you're all aware, we're a creature of New York statute and thus have duties that we have to perform to enforce the law. They're laid out in those paragraphs. Our cases range from infractions such as speeding tickets through misdemeanors, including DWIs, and on up to, of course, the most serious felonies, including homicides and sexual assaults. We're involved with those cases from before charges are filed during the investigatory stage through the prosecution, and, of course, any subsequent appeal. So that is sort of the breadth and the width of the cases that we handle. I've got with me today Carrie Stan, who's with my office and is much more familiar than I am with anything budgetary. So she will cut me off when I make mistakes, and I will ask her questions when I don't understand the question I'm being asked. So that's who we are. First off, in meeting the target, we took a number of efforts, as I'm sure all the other departments did. I've laid out some of them here. They're right up there. We've downgraded one position from secretary to receptionist. We've also gone through and zeroed out a number of other costs, and those are listed there under the second bullet point. Those include extradition, witness fees, confidential investigations, and I have to put an asterisk with those. Those are clearly costs which, depending on what crimes occur during the next year, we may have to come back and ask for money, simply because if we have a serious case and the defendant ends up in another state, the decision would be made by my boss whether or not to extradite. And, of course, that's an expensive process, as I know you're aware, and we would have to ask you for a contingent request for such things. Since there's no way to predict that, it's not included in the budget. We've also eliminated an on-call cell phone. The ADA is still on call, but that's a cost he's incurring himself. And those calls come in day or night whenever there's a need for a search warrant or advice about, you know, an investigation which happens at 2 in the morning or 2 in the afternoon. We've also made a number of efforts just within the office. One of the simplest ones is simply mailing things. I believe in a single month we've cut that from a $400 amount to, I think it's $250, simply by being a little bit more careful about, you know, instead of mailing everything, grouping it together and hand-delivering things when possible. In addition to the things listed up here, we've taken a number of steps which are not on the PowerPoint, one of which is we're no longer pursuing for our own office a case management software system, which would certainly increase our own efficiency, but also would clearly come at a heavy initial investment cost along with the ongoing costs. You can see from the budget, of course, a number of other costs. We've got zero training dollars budgeted. We've eliminated a copy rule for CityCorps, which is $500, and certainly convenient for ADAs who are over there handling cases. Our other costs include access to updated legal authorities. In the past, we've purchased books, and we're in the process of researching when we can access those same materials online. And have, we've seen a number of places we can do that, and we're going to continue to look into that. And finally, we're also pursuing other grant opportunities and continue to do that to, you know, hopefully find other sources of revenue to enable our office to do what we need to do. In terms of what we do, the list doesn't grow shorter, of course. In fact, one of the major additions to our caseload, which just kicked in the middle of August, is what's known as Leander's Law. That affects the DWI laws here in the state of New York. The initial changes went into effect in December of 2009, but here in August of 2010, more changes have gone into effect. In particular, a requirement that persons who are convicted of generally misdemeanor DWIs and sentenced to what's called a conditional discharge. In that circumstance, the district attorney's office under the Tompkins County plan is responsible for monitoring to make sure the person, has the ignition interlock in their car, which for those who aren't familiar with it is a device that prevents the car from starting if you've been drinking. And so our office, the district attorney's office, will be supervising those cases. And frankly, we don't know how much of an investment of our time it's going to be. But a lot of cases get resolved in that fashion in the town and local courts. So there's no shortage of those cases. It remains to be seen the total impact in terms of office time we'll need to dedicate to that. I touched on this a minute ago. Our office frequently has costs, well, not frequently, but certainly reliably costs, which we can't predict. Those relate to a major crime. Something bad happens, we have to prosecute it. And there's no way, as I sit here today, to tell you what those costs might be. So clearly that's something which, you know, if we need to, we'll come before you again and make that request. And I know Ms. Wilkinson has done that in the past. Here are total expenditures. I don't have any specific commentary. If anyone has any questions, please let me know. I would state we don't have any OTRs, so it's going to shorten up our presentation in that regard. I've got this slide and the next one. The next one relates. I'll flip to it here. To total expenditures in dollars. So I'm going to click forward. If anybody wants to go back, please let me know.
I just have a quick question. When you said that you zeroed out extradition and something else on that last slide, I just didn't understand what you meant and how you're covering, how you will cover if you need to.
Well, essentially, those are costs we don't know that we're going to have. It could be there's actually zero. If we're fortunate and we don't have to extradite anyone, then there'll be no costs. And as it stands, we have no way of saying what the cost would be because we don't know where the person would be and thus the cost in bringing him or her back. So we're listing it as zero because that's what we know we'll have. It certainly could be higher.
Are you ready for questions now?
Please, of course.
Okay. Martha, and then Peter.
Yeah, Dan, I'm confused about the two tables on expenditures. The local, looks like the local dollars are higher than the total dollars.
What page are you on, Martha?
Well, the
slide right there.
This slide, and then you turn over to the next slide. Are they? Is it?
You're talking about the PowerPoints?
Yeah. Are they labeled wrong, or is that?
Step in a second. I want to answer your question cogently here. So you're referring to the 1049 number versus the 1218 number?
$1,049,000 in 2011. And on the back, looks like the local dollars are $1.2 million.
I apologize. I think those are flip-flopped, to use the accounting term. Clearly, the higher number includes revenues that are not from the county.
Okay, so that last one is total, and you think that the one on the bottom of the front page is the local dollars?
The 1049 number?
Yeah, 984 in 2010 and $1,049,000 in 2011.
Right, and that's, I believe, our target.
And just the local expenditures?
Yes.
Okay. And I got a couple more. Is that okay?
Yeah, go ahead.
Leander's Law, I thought probation was supervising those folks.
Some of them are. Persons who are sentenced to probation, let me back up. Anyone who's convicted of a couple different subsections of 1192, that is the misdemeanor DWI charge or the felonies, either the common law or the per se charge, upon being convicted, the judge has to sentence them to a number of things, including the ignition interlock. The judge can either put them on a conditional discharge or sentence them to probation. If they're sentenced to probation, the probation department, in particular the probation officer who supervises them, supervises that. So they keep an eye on the ignition interlock. But persons who are sentenced to a conditional discharge have no obligation to report to probation. Probation doesn't keep an eye on them in any regards. Instead, our office, the district attorney's office, would be monitoring that and making sure that they install it and comply with it.
Okay. Any idea what the split is? How many, approximately how many go to probation and how many are on conditional discharge?
I don't have an exact number in front of me. I can certainly tell you in local court, it's pretty common in the courts I handle that you see someone who's convicted of a DWI first offense, unaggravated in any way, i.e. not an accident, the BAC might not be too high, that they get a conditional discharge. So it's pretty common. I apologize, I don't have exact numbers for you.
Okay. And just one other thing. In past years, we've had a breakdown of caseloads, you know, how many misdemeanors, how many felonies, and running a couple of years in a row. It's just an interesting way for us to track how much business you're doing, especially when you look at your budget over the years, it gives us a good sense of kind of what level of stress everybody's under. If we can get that kind of information,
and I apologize, not this minute.
I mean, in a week or so, whenever.
We can certainly get that to you. I don't have it today, as I think you're.
Yeah, no, that's fine.
But we can certainly get that to you.
Thank you very much.
Peter, you had your hand up.
Yeah. Let's see, just to repeat again what Carol said, it seems to me that zeroing out extraditions and other unpredictable events and charging, having that contribute to the 7% reduction is a little silly.
Do you have a question?
Well, it's a comment. I don't see that it makes any sense to count that as part of a 7% reduction.
Okay, but Peter, that's exactly what I was referring to earlier. I understand and I respect your comments, but I think that there's a point that comment would be way more appropriate than it is right now. Okay?
Well, okay, I don't know that point, but let me ask another thing.
Let me tell you when that point would be.
Yeah.
When we get to the point where we're voting on the budget, that's the time you would make that kind of a comment or at least bring something forward. If, in fact, you wanted to plus that line, you would bring a number and you would then do it. But go ahead.
Okay. So another question I had is that the reduction of a secretarial position to a receptionist, is that an individual that gets their salary downgraded, or is that... Is it something different than that?
Well, I can tell you what happened. We had a person who was the secretary, and essentially an assessment of our office needs indicated we could probably make do with less from that position. And so it's essentially the same person, although she's not there, if that answers your question. We're looking to fill a position. Since we reclassified it, you have to list it, I understand.
Okay, all right. And the other thing, I wonder if you track at all how much you're subject to an increased mandate from New York State, how that translates into dollars per year. Do you ever look at that kind of thing? When you talked about Leander's Law, I wonder whether that was a single example or whether that was sort of a continuing trend.
It's clearly part of a continuing trend. It's sort of the most obvious recent example. Hardly a state legislative session goes by where there's not enactments to the penal law, which at least require our office to be updated and to keep current on them, frequently involve, modification of crimes, new crimes, things that we have to be aware of. wholesale additions like Leander's Law aren't that common. But to get back to your question, I don't have a statistic that analyzes the impact of something like Leander's Law.
Okay, thank you.
Brian and then Frank.
Just real quickly, I too am a little bit confused with the $1,049,000 and $1,218,000, whatever. Just one quick question. Does this follow the request of a 6.9% reduction?
It does.
Okay.
And let me give some clarity to the flip-flop, and Dan is right. If you look at your budget, page 76, you'll see that the total county cost, which is local cost, is $1,049,000. And if you go up a little higher on that page, you'll see the total expense, which is their total expenditures of $1,218,000. So if you want confirmation, it's right there. With respect to the cut, remember this is a cut in their target funding. Targets are adjusted every year by things that are beyond the control of the departments, like the rise in fringe benefits. So if you see, there's actually a growth in spending there. Mm-hmm. But still, that growth in spending is after the department has cut 6.9% from a target that's been affected by costs that are rising beyond their control, specifically those fringe benefit costs that are really pushing those numbers up.
Okay.
So they did hit their 6.9%.
And offset through the FTEs that they have.
That's right.
And somebody did bring up a valid point in that, you know, there's always those unexpected. I'm wondering how it was handled in the past with extraditions and
contingent
and things. Were they built into the budget and kind of just absorbed like free money, or how did that work before?
I believe we've made contingent requests in the past.
Yes.
I know of at least one such instance.
There was one this year.
Just this correct. Last year.
And we had to come back to the legislature and get more money for that.
That's right. That was for expert witnesses. I will tell you that the amount that was budgeted in 2010 for those three items looks to be $3,000. So we're not talking about tens of thousands of dollars here.
Mm-hmm.
You budget $1,000 for extradition, witness fees, and confidential investigations. Again, I think that's pretty much been the baseline budget number, and it's a very volatile thing.
Okay.
So you're right. When there's been a bust of those numbers, they've come back to the legislature to get a draw from contingency.
Okay.
And I apologize if I'm going to repeat something that was just said. Carrie's just telling me that in the past we've budgeted money for that, say, $10,000, and at the end of the year if we didn't spend it, we had leftover money. Clearly that's not something we can fairly ask for in this budget circumstance. We can't say, give us money, we may or may not spend it. I don't think anybody
mm-hmm.
hopefully is doing
mm-hmm.
that.
Yep. Frank, Mike, Carol.
Thanks, Jim. The there was $54,000 that we just did, and there were three different items that came out of contingency. You mentioned at the beginning that you were not pursuing a computer-aided, and I'm sorry, I don't remember the exact
case manager.
The case manager.
Right.
If can you say something about what that would cost? Why you decided not to do it? And if you did have it, would it provide some efficiencies and some other savings?
It would certainly provide efficiencies, just in terms of the work within our office and handling the cases, entering the data, and generating documents as we prosecute a case. In terms of the initial investment, if I can consult with Carrie for a minute, she was more involved in that process, and I can probably get you an answer there. It was between $80,000 and $100,000 that were likely to cost to get into a system like that. And clearly it's something, you know, we'd still be interested in, but again, given the budget situation, it's just not realistic to be putting that in there at this time.
Mm-hmm. Micah.
A big mandate in the DA's budget, of course, is the DA's salary, which we don't have any control over. It must be the same as the county judges, and those are basically set by the state. There's been a lot of movement lately. In fact, there's some lawsuits out there to demand that the state increase the salary of judges, which would then increase the salary of the DA. Are you hearing anything about that? Should we be concerned that maybe after election we might see some salary increases for judges that we would have to deal with?
Honestly, I have no idea. I'm aware of the ongoing debate and the lawsuits, but I have no idea of anything that might be coming, you know, tomorrow, let alone after the election. So I can't give an answer on that one. I apologize.
I believe it's been many, many years since DAs and judges have received a salary increase. Carol?
Yeah, I was just...
Raise your hand back there.
I was going to add another question, which was how many years had it been? I think it's over 10 years now. If you know that figure, you can give that. My other question is the inter-fund revenues that's shown in here of 84 and 981. Where is
that's
that
stop
from?
DWI money.
Yeah, that's correct.
And that'll show up in our budget somewhere else. Where?
It's in the 4250 account under stop DWI.
Under that specific program. Okay. And the portion of the DA salary and other public safety that's shown as state aid, does that come directly from the state?
It does.
As revenue?
Yes.
Okay. Thank you.
Peter, then Martha.
Just to point out, the reduction from 13 to 11.25 FTEs is 1.75, not 1.25 reduction, the bottom line on your chart. And number two, I'm surprised that, I mean, that's an enormous reduction in FTEs at 15%. I'm surprised that that doesn't translate, or that translate only into a 7% reduction in expenses. So I don't know, just an observation.
Martha?
The case management software, is there any way in which the program that emergency response and law enforcement is getting would be able to, that the DA's office can link to that and kind of use the same system? Because I thought we were going to a unified system that the courts could use and that would really improve that kind of communication about data and about cases. Is there maybe there's a module on the program? I'm making this up, but you know, it's like I wondered if there's a way to piggyback on the program that we're already getting.
My understanding is, first off, regarding I think it's the Spillman systems, right, what you're talking about,
right,
that we're going to be able to have access to all of that, meaning we'll be able to access police reports, dispatch recordings, those things through the system. And I imagine, I was not involved in those negotiations, I can't imagine they wouldn't offer that, but I don't think, again, that we're going to pursue that at this time. So is that, just let me correct, check with Carrie to make sure I'm not misstating things. Yes, Spillman did have such an option within what they were offering us, but again, the cost was in the neighborhood of $100,000 for our office, because essentially we do a lot of different stuff than, say, the police does or the dispatch does in terms of case management. So there's a whole different level.
But it might be less expensive than a standalone. I thought I remembered a year ago talking to Gwen about a standalone program, and I mean, I'm gonna ask that maybe you work with Joe and maybe Greg Potter to see if there's a way to tell us what it would cost to add a module to bring them into the system, because I don't know where we're gonna find money like that, but I'd like to consider it.
Aren't we bonding that project? Aren't we bonding that project? Okay, Brian.
Well, just you were bringing this up in terms of office efficiency, and one of the modules that is part of that Spillman is an evidence management module, which would link between the police and courts and the DA in your office. So that'll help there. I'm not aware of a case management system for Spillman. Maybe there is. I don't know.
Okay.
But you're right. I'm sure it would be quite expensive.
I have written down here during the conversation that we should check with Greg about that, the IT guy, and let you always have a better answer.
If I can just double check real quick.
Sure.
Carrie's giving me a little bit better idea of how that would actually work. Spillman doesn't offer, say, a module, but there was at least one other company we were working with that can link into the Spillman system. So it's compatible, but it's not part of the Spillman offering.
Any other questions for these two people? Thank you very much, Beth.
Thanks, sir.
It's break time. We'll be back in, it says here 5:30, but we will, it'll be about 5:38. Here we go. County Clerk 2011, and we'll get this rolling right now. They have a PowerPoint in three shades of blue, and here we go.
Good evening.
Good evening.
I'd like to introduce a couple of very important people. I have two deputies. One in the records office is Maureen Reynolds. I have a deputy at the Department of Motor Vehicles. She's the supervisor. Her name's Roxanne Iacovelli. They are incomparable. Now, you want to ask questions or do I talk?
No, you go through your program and then we'll ask questions. We'll go through questions at the
end, all right? Do you mind if I let
Maureen
do this?
All right.
She did all the...
Nice glasses.
She's the techie.
My techie. Which button do we put? Kevin, which button? All right, so basically we have the four departments, county clerk, DMV, the records center, the records, and central services. If you have any questions about those, we can explain that, but I think from our recent being up here, you know what we do in most of those departments.
Maureen, excuse me. You have to talk a little more into the mic.
Okay. So do you have any questions on our four departments?
Now, Maureen, why don't you run through it, and then we'll
sure.
do questions at the end.
Sure.
Okay.
So here's our total expenditures for 2010 and 2011. We do have one less person. That's how we came up to be able to meet our fiscal target. We don't have any OTRs. Here are our revenues. Our revenue streams are actually increasing. There is good news out there. Real estate is picking up. Mortgages are people are refinancing. There's been a lot of commercial development. So the revenues in the clerk's office have been increasing. At DMV, we're also in the eight-year cycle, and we're in the upswing of revenue. You can see from there that we are coming up again. We have a few revenue streams. We have one for the clerk's fees. We have the DMV use fee. We also have the highway, the defund money that was done a while back. And that's fairly steady, with small increases in that. We don't see any downticks yet. So our highlights. We are totally digital in the county clerk's office. We're back to 1817. In 9 years, we've done 194 years worth of records. We're working on our court records right now. The Office of Court Administration has selected us and three other counties in the state to implement a pilot project of e-filing. We're working with that and hope to have that up by the beginning of the year. Of course, the only holdup on that is the Office of Court Administration. We're ready to go. New York State's also going to be implementing e-recording in the next year or two, and we hope to be one of the first counties to also do that. We've been to New York City to see their e-filing or their e-recording and hope we can mimic it here shortly. At DMV, they have successfully launched the EDL, the Enhanced Driver's License Program, and you've seen they've rolled out all the new plates, the gold and blue, and they have nominal or non-existent wait in line times, which is always wonderful. Sometimes people come in and see a lot of people there, but the lines move very quickly. It's not like they have long waits, so it's nice. As for records, we have installed the electronic solution for implementing the countywide digital records center. We're planning on scanning the majority of documents stored in the inactive records center to the system, and we've successfully commenced a bunch of pilot projects, which I went over in June when I did the demonstration about what we've done. We've had lots of other departments contact us and want us to help them. We're going over to speak to mental health this week, and we just gave a demonstration to personnel also. So that's it.
Questions? for these people. Pat?
Could you just briefly explain how you're going to reduce, one FTE?
We did. Yeah. We already did this year. We don't have a records officer position anymore, and most of our imaging, the scanning work, we farmed out to Challenge. Challenge does almost all of our scanning for all these projects. Sure.
We have an employee at Central Services, Pat, that was really a mail clerk and doing just mail. He had expressed often if we could please give him more work to do. He's very industrious and very ambitious and very thorough and timely, which is what we really need. So when I looked at the positions I have available, I thought if we no longer had a records officer, my mail clerk could become a mail-records clerk. So that's how we attritioned that one position. We did increase his hours, and everything's been running very smoothly.
Thank you.
Anyone else for DMV or county clerk? I have one question. Then go ahead, Dooley.
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to take your job.
No, that's okay. Everyone does.
I'm realizing that you have contracts with some entities, but I don't see a list of contracts, and that applies to a lot of the departments, and I'm wondering where in the budget book there might be a list of contracts. Have I just not
found
it?
We don't have contracts. We have no contracts.
You don't have a contract with Challenge?
No,
we pay for piecework.
Yes, county, it's all of our costs and disbursements, as Mike Lane will tell you, are mandated by the CPLR, which is the Civil Practice Law and Rules, and the real estate tax law and the real property law. So we have no contracts to perform for other people. We're contracted. They're going to contract me again in November when I run for office. We work for the people of Tompkins County.
I guess I assumed that you had a contract with Challenge for them to do your work.
Oh, no.
I didn't know that. No, there was no contract.
Oh, no. And it's a wonderful organization, and they're very, again, very thorough and very timely. And we're hoping that, I think we're, Maureen in particular would like.
Matt, what is the D fund?
It's a highway fund.
Okay.
All right. Motor vehicle use tax.
Okay. All right. I remember. Joe, you had your hand up. What Dooley, for me just now, Dooley brought up something about contracts, and then maybe that's something that over the next 6 weeks we may be able to figure out how to put that some way. But go ahead.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. All that's going to lag a bit. We'll try to get a kind of a separate report on contracts to you. I know that's been a part of the format in the past.
Yeah.
So we'll try to get it in an organized way to you quickly.
Good news.
Okay.
Thanks, Joe. Martha, Mike.
I'm trying to coordinate the table in your PowerPoint with the book. I guess I'm actually confused.
I'm sorry.
Why does your target go up? Does that show your revenues? Why does your target go up and everybody else's is going down?
I think the only increase was the fringes.
Fringes weren't in the budget in 2009 for comparison. So when targets were put in place for 2011, there was an adjustment to targets to take into account the fringe increase.
But everybody was supposed to show a 6.9.
No, but the fringes were taken into account when they did the targets because of the fringes.
Because so this was a 6.9% reduction on what we were given as the first target.
Yeah, it's the same as the district attorney. Remember, their target was lifted because fringe benefit costs went up. That was beyond their control, so the target was increased. And it's a cut from that elevated level. The 6.9% is a cut from that elevated level. So that's why you'll see growth, bottom line growth, in many of the local dollar budgets. So there's still been, again, targets grown with fringes driving it, and it's cut 6.9% from that to get to our budget target.
Mike, I would just point out for folks that as a person who in real life works a lot with real property and works with this county clerk's office a lot, and they do a wonderful job down there, but the fees have gotten just terrible for people, and that's not their fault. But the recording fees for deeds and mortgages and other documents has been increased not only by the state but by this county legislature. The filing fees now for certain kinds of civil actions, the state just thought they would ding the banks by increasing the filing fee for a foreclosure action.
That's
but
horrible.
That also hurts the average Joe who may be carrying a small mortgage on a piece of property he sold to try to help somebody out, and now just to file the document costs $400. So I just would point that out, that people are really suffering. The where that money from the state for our annual assessment, where that comes from, is a huge increase in the filing fee for the assessment form that has to be filed with every deed, which now, if you buy a strip of land from your neighbor of a quarter of an acre, you're talking a filing fee of $250 for that form. I just want to point that out.
All due respect, Mike, I did not hear a question. But
is there anything we can do about it?
Well,
okay. Someone had their hand up.
I'm on my soapbox often when this comes before Albany, and they call me poison pen. Oh, there comes a letter from Tompkins County. I am sorry. I think the mortgage tax is horrible. I think the increase in revenue stamps is horrible. I think what DMV is doing is bad, making everybody get a new license plate. But...
Great. Carol.
Yeah, one of my questions for you is how can I get one of those white and blue license plates? I made the mistake of handing in my old ones before I found out it was orange. You don't have to answer that.
There is no more.
My question is actually for Joe about the... because I think that this relates to everybody, it's not just this. Didn't we last year make the adjustment for the fringe benefits getting worked into everybody's budgets? And then is there... Well, answer that for me.
Yeah,
you did.
So it's in the 2010 budget. So those fringes are in the 2010 budget. Remember, though, the growth in fringes between 2010 and 2011. So that's, again, that's a cost that is beyond the control of the department. So the way targets are calculated here is those uncontrollable increases are added to a department's target. That establishes really their new base for the upcoming year. That's how much you would have to spend if nothing changed. And then you cut from that. Yeah, that began in 2010.
So that if we compare their last year's budget and this year's budget, shouldn't we still see the 6.9%?
Not the 6.9% cut. You'd have to see first the growth in that base of spending. So you first need to see the maintenance of effort budget for that department. How much would that have been without any cuts? And you would have seen significant growth there driven by the increases in fringe benefits between 2010 and 2011, way up. So that became everybody's maintenance of effort budget. To be able to reduce those budgets, to hit our tax levy goal, that maintenance of effort budget had to be cut by 6.9%. So that's what it's being cut from. So you will see in many budgets actual increases in local dollar spending, but that, again, represents a cut in everything other than fringe benefits in those departments.
Okay.
I had somebody over here, Frank, and then I'll go back to you, Brian.
Aurora, when the new sales tax kicks in that will be going to the feds, the 3.8%, will you be responsible for collecting that on the sale of property?
Real estate or
real estate in order to finance the health care bill at the federal level. There's a new sales tax.
There's going to be a sales tax on real estate?
No, I'm not making it up. It's 3.8% on the sale of real property. And I'm not sure if it's going into effect in 2011.
Is that a new law?
Yes.
I really am ignorant of that law. A sales tax on real estate,
yes.
Not personal property?
That'll go right to the
Fed. I would like very much.
Well, the next time we see you, you will all know about that, right?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay. Brian?
Jim, just for clarification, and I wasn't aware of this fact about fringes going up and the maintenance of effort I was aware of, but factoring in the additional fringes, just as clarification, now that I know that, pension costs, is that part of it as well?
Oh, yeah, that's the driver.
Okay,
yeah.
All right.
Yes.
All right.
Any other questions, Dooley?
This is a question about the enhanced driver's license. You mentioned in the handout that you've rolled that out, but I'm wondering how many you are issuing and whether you get a reasonable cut of that and whether these enhanced driver's licenses will also be being renewed for 8-year period.
We have issued over 900 this calendar year. We get 12.7% of every cent that comes in. Right. This is a recording. Last year we did 1,147, and as of the end of August we did over 900. Anything else?
Will they be being reissued for 8-year periods?
Yes.
And they're more expensive, so that's a big shot of money to the state, and then nothing for 7 more years.
12.7% for Tompkins County, cheaper than passports and
yes.
Okay.
Yeah, but and someone had their hand up back there. Martha, then Frank, Will, and then Frank.
I'm sorry to perseverate on this fringe thing, but since it's going to keep coming up, if it will help if I can understand it. So the 2010 number, to be maintenance of effort, it went up how much?
Oh, I don't have the maintenance of effort budgets by department. I don't have that. I mean, we can work through the arithmetic maybe tomorrow or something, but in terms of what the original budgets were for each department prior to the cuts, I don't have that.
I mean, the idea of what the fringes went up from this year to, you know that pension went up from 11 to 16, right?
Pension went up, the health benefits went up.
Fringes were 40.5%. In 2011, they're 51%.
Right.
51% of
right.
salaries.
Because
fringe.
Of the $2 million increase, primarily $2 million increase in the pension payment.
Okay. If I can just finish, so that every department sees a bump, and so if anything, I'm not sure if the denominators are the same, but so from 40.5 to 51 is 9.5. So anything on that percentage increase, anything less than 9.5 is a cut. Is that right?
That might not be a bad back of the napkin way of looking at it. If you'd like for tomorrow, I'll do a couple of examples on how this works. Because I can see the confusion. When I first looked at some of the slides coming up, I had kind of the same thought. I'll try to get some examples of how it comes into play.
Thank you.
Brian. And just as a bit more of a clarification, it also depends on department and what system you're in and what tier you're in.
And how labor intensive your department is.
Police, for example, that's going to be more.
Well,
it's the road patrol.
The way it's assessed, it's all aggregated. For example, the sheriff's department, it's got the same fringe rate as the finance department, even though the sheriff's department pension rate is substantially higher than the finance department's membership. Because in the aggregate, there's $37 million of salaries being assessed various rates from 16% to over 20%.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so you just average that out.
Yeah. So we took the whole $6.7 million and put it in and determined what the aggregate rate was going to be.
Okay. Will, Frank, either.
Thank you, Jim. Another license plate question for you, Aurora. Living in Ithaca, we get to see license plates from all over the country.
Yes.
Beautiful ones out there. I take note that once again New York has managed to make a license plate that is both retro and ugly. I'm right that they probably didn't ask you for advice on that. What was the impetus for that?
Originally, I think what was going on was a need for more money, and the state of New York Department of Motor Vehicles said, everybody's got to have a new license plate. Okay? We're going to charge you $25 for that license plate, besides what you pay for your registration. Everybody went crazy. Not that the county clerks have that much of a voice, but we are the agents for Danby. We really put up a squall about that. Then it went from that to you will maintain your plates, and when you re-register your vehicle, you can keep them for a while. They're going to pull all of them eventually. But any new car that comes in for registration will get one of the uglies. So, and I'll tell you, there's mixed emotion. There are people who love them. How about you?
I hate it.
Can I trade?
I think the younger kids like them. But there will come a time where you won't see any more blue and white ones. I just want to tell you something strange, that New York State is pushing for these blue and gold plates. And in front of DMV, we have a big, huge blue and white plate that says ABC 234, 2345. So I called DMV and said, okay, if I've got to do it, you better send us a new, we can't have a new blue and gold. We haven't got the money to make them. So I might pay for it myself.
Frank?
I want to go back to the question Dooley was asking you about the new licenses and the 8-year licenses. Won't those be issued each year as a new burst of people have to renew?
Roxanne?
Tell me.
What's that?
Somehow
it's like a
work.
Well, it's
an
8-year cycle.
But everyone isn't on the same 8 years, right, Roxanne?
No,
majority
of them are.
Right.
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 Now, and I want to make sure I heard the answer. You don't get any piece of the action on that at all? You do.
We get 12%.
That's why we want. People call the office. I now am a DMV employee more than I am in this office, in the courthouse. Every time somebody calls and says, I'm having trouble on the computer, I'll say, come right down to the office. We'll take care of it for you immediately. It's amazing how many people say, okay, hang up and come on down. 12.7% is what we get of anything that comes into the office over the counter. If you do it online or you do it by mail, we don't get it. So anything that the state of New York increases that we may handle as agents, we'll get 12.7%.
Is that why you strong-arm me in the parking lot to bring my registration, my re-registration?
That's why I talked your daughter into getting a truck.
Thanks.
Pierstein.
Yeah, I got two questions. One is, once again, this thing about the fringe benefit. Joe, my understanding is the way that you made these calculations where you factored into the 2010, to get the maintenance of effort budget, you factored into the 2010 budget any increases that you knew about, like pre-negotiated wage settlements and increased fringes and the pension cost. And that gave you a new number, and then you figured out what you had to do was to take 6.9% out of that new number and make that reduction. Is that correct? Is that the right way of looking at it?
Stated much more clearly than I've been able to tonight. That's exactly it.
Okay, all right. Now for the important question. I have a This is to Aurora. I have a very dim childhood memory of that orange as being a license plate that I saw as a little kid. Is that right?
You and I had the same childhood, yes.
I remember reading about that.
Oh, baloney, a baloney. Yes.
It is right, is it?
Yes.
My dad has. I still have my father somewhere in the basement. I have something important to say.
Somebody better ask you questions soon.
I want to tell you what we're doing as far as trying to get more money at a DMV. We are working on a bill, a resolution to be presented to the Assembly that instead of raising our 12.7%, which we would like done, if they say, well, we don't think we can raise the rate, we're going to ask that we please obtain 12.7% of whatever comes out of that computer into Albany that's from Tompkins County, Cortland from Cortland County, Schuyler from Schuyler County. We should get a bit of what Albany is getting from our county online. Pardon me.
Any other questions for Aurora? Thank you very much, ladies.
Thank you.
Airport, page 3 in your white book, and Bob is here. Good evening. Okay, I'm going to give you the salient points of the 2011 airport budget and just start my presentation with telling you that we've gone for about 24 years without any subsidy from Tompkins County taxpayers, and I hope and expect that 2011 will be the same story. This is a total of our expenditures, $2.7 million for 2011. That's $224,000 more than this year, a 9% increase. That may seem like a lot compared to what other people are being asked to do. But it includes things that the airlines need and have asked for. It's within the terms of the airline agreement, and they're willing to pay for them. So that's kind of how we proceed. We've been very frugal in our budget calculations and held everything that we could hold. As you will see, the number of full-time equivalents are still the same, 14. So that list there roughly makes up the $224,000 or close to it. As you will see, the fringe costs increased by a substantial amount. That represents about a third of that additional amount. We've held the service contracts. We've actually reduced them except for one new one, which is a one-term, one-time contract of about $36,000, which will take the terrazzo flooring in the terminal and convert the process so that we don't end up stripping it twice a year with harsh chemicals. It'll be treated with some type of diamond-faced abrasion equipment that will produce a permanent shine that will need to be buffed
will have no chemicals attached to it and no polish from that point onwards. So that's a good step in terms of sustainability. Electricity we're putting up a little bit this year. We haven't increased that total for many years because we've been reducing our consumption, but the cost of electricity has caught up with us, and so we're increasing the total by 15,000 for next year. TSA security is up by a little bit. Just to remind you that we get a payment from the TSA of about $150,000 a year, which is stacked up against an expense of $250,000 a year. So we end up subsidizing that for about $100,000. Local share of construction costs will be up in 2011 because we've got two large projects. We'll be constructing a new sand storage building and replacing the old Teganic footprint with new ramp. And so that will increase the local share by 22,000 over what it is this year. And then the parking lot expansion, that will be approximately the first payment for a three-year payment for a project that's starting next week, about a $150,000 project. And this is how we pay for those expenses. About $1.2 million in rental fees. The greater proportion of that is the terminal rent, but it includes things like Teganic Aviation, Eastdale Flying Club, and the T-hanger rents. Landing and aircraft parking fees, $790,000. Again, most of that is airline-based, but there are general aviation fees included in that total. Concessions, the vast majority of that amount is from parking and the rental car concession fees. Now we're showing the security payment as a revenue, but of course it's not. It's against the $246,000 that we'll be paying Sheriff Mescal for his great services to the terminal. Just to give you an idea of what's happening with the passengers, that's the picture from the year 2006. This year we're running about 10% over last year, and last year was 20% over 2008. So the picture is looking really good. We're estimating a 3% increase for 2011, which I think is very modest. And I heard numbers today for August. We actually broke 11,000 passengers for the first time in our history. So, you know, all that's looking very positive. So 2010 highlights, obviously the passenger numbers are the primary star. Serving the, and I think it is a result of, you know, not just the airfares being comparable, but the fact that we're able to deal on a personal level with people and they don't have to deal with the hassles of larger airports. So that's all things that we are bringing this year, and we've brought for a number of years now. We've added some very important de-icing and anti-icing equipment to our inventory this year to help in critical times during the winter when we've gotten ice storms and freezing rain. This new equipment will allow us to deal with that in a much more efficient way. And And before the end of the year, I hope that we can present to you a lot of initiatives that we plan on bringing to the airport in the future by way of sustainability. These are the projects for 2011, new sand storage building, construction of the old ramp site where the old Teganic Aviation Facility used to be, and conversion of the terrazzo floor. This is a picture of what those fees mean to the airlines, and what's important to them is the cost per enplaned passenger. That's how they look at each airport to see, you know, how it compares to other airports and whether they're getting a good deal or not. 14.18 is not particularly a good deal for the airlines, but it tends to be higher at smaller airports than larger ones that can offset those costs with huge revenue streams from their concessions. We don't have that luxury. It is higher. It's a higher by $1.19 than it was last year, this year. But that's because our expenses are 200 and some odd thousand higher. And the 12.99 for 2010 is a reflection of the number of passengers that we've had going through our doors this year. And that's it. I'd like to answer any questions you have. I'm not authorized to talk about charges for carry-on baggage or trips to the bathroom on the airport, on the aircraft, or anything like that. But I'll be happy to answer any questions about the airport or the airport budget.
Mike, go ahead. Bob, when the terminal was built, one of the things that was looked at was revenue that could be generated from advertising space there. How are we doing there, and is the Air Force Task Force doing anything about trying to generate more advertising and hence more revenue?
We have a long-term agreement with an advertising agency, so our revenues are roughly $20,000 a year from advertising. The lion's share of that goes to the advertising company because they do all the legwork and they go out and get everyone to actually sign up the contracts. It's really too big a job for us to take on ourselves, so we farmed it out to a reputable company, and they're doing a fair job.
But isn't there a lot of space still to be leased up there?
Yeah, they have these purges, you know, once or twice a year to try and increase that, and they do a fair job. I think it will, you know, as the airport becomes more in prominent and more recognized, people tend to want to advertise there more. So I'm hoping that these larger numbers of passengers will increase people's desire to do advertising.
Brian, Peter, Will, Martha, Carol.
Thanks. Just getting back to what seems to be the theme for tonight, the fringes. And thanks for you've actually broken out the increase for us. And with that increase and showing your overall budgetary increase, it's like about 30%.
Right.
Joe, is that pretty much how it runs? That sounds like a lot.
It is a lot. It's going to vary by department. So the effect that fringes have on a department relate to how labor-intensive that department is. You're going to see somewhere it's relatively small relative to the whole budget because they have so many other expenses there. So all I can tell you is it's a large impact across the board, but it will vary from department to department.
Okay. And I appreciate you breaking that out. That's that's for me, that's an eye-opener for sure.
Yeah. And you've also got to understand that the airport is an enterprise fund, so it's not constrained by a target.
It's, if I may, that, I think that's an important point here. And Barb will be up next, too. Our target reductions affect local dollars, property tax dollars, sales tax dollars.
Mm-hmm.
So in the case of these enterprise accounts, there aren't any property tax dollars or sales tax dollars involved in those departments. So they are looked at a little bit differently than a property tax-supported operating department.
Peter.
Let's see. I was going to make the same comment with a different thing. I noticed before that you had one item. I don't remember what it was. $8,000, it says local expense or something like that, a couple of slides back.
$22,000 local construction costs.
Yeah.
Well, something like that. Okay. Yeah. And I wondered how that jived with this zero number that I saw on the program sheets. When I saw that number zero, I decided I shouldn't even look at where your expenses come and go. You present a balanced budget, so my only interest is the service that you supply. But
well, let me clarify that then. The $22,000 is a local cost to the airport, but it's not a local cost to the county.
Oh, okay. All right. Okay.
So it's folded into our budget and becomes part of the airline rates and charges, but it's not a county cost.
Okay. So I have one other question. The $14 fee that you spoke, is that a per boarding passenger or is it per landing of aircraft or what?
In order to get that number, what I did was take the cost to the airlines of terminal rent, landing fees, and aircraft parking fees, divided that by the number of N-plane passengers, boarded passengers, and that's how I get the $14.
Okay, and what kind of range do you have on that? I mean, at some point it'll increase to a point where this becomes unattractive. I just wonder how high do they go, those numbers?
Well, that my concern has always been that number doesn't go too high. A few years ago, when we just had U.S. Airways here and our passenger numbers were down to in the 60,000s, that number was up around $21, $22 a passenger. And it's very concerning because, you know, that's expensive. The average for airports is still around $7. So uh-huh. we're high, but, you know, it's higher usually for smaller airports.
Okay, thank you.
Well,
thank you. I guess building on that question, at this point, are we in pretty good shape in terms of maintaining the present mix of airlines?
I'm holding on to wood here. So yes, yes, we're doing. They're all doing pretty well. Their load factors, which is one of the important things, are in the high 70s and 80s. We actually Delta had an average load factor in July of 90%, which is pretty remarkable.
And I understand that we had a contract with TC3 for the conference room, and that's coming to an end. Any progress on finding a new sponsor for that?
I have to issue a request for proposals and see what interest there is out there for renting that space. TC3 is still interested, but they can't afford to pay us rent right now.
What is the magnitude of, in the past, looking back, what
was... Well, we haven't... originally, the contract with TC3 was signed because they spent the money to fit the conference room out. Okay. And in return for that payment and in return for the visual aids that they put into the room, they got preferential use of the room for 10 years. And then beyond that, they were supposed to pay $6,000 a year in rent, which they couldn't afford to do. So that's why we're looking for proposals now.
Thank you. Martha.
On the front page of our your slideshow, you've got the budget and the one-time money. You have zero on that line. But then the next slide, you've got what seems like a couple of one-time expenses. The construction on the parking lot, that's 3 years, but it's not recurring. redoing the floor. Is there any reason you didn't break them out on that, on the other table?
No, I was just looking at the figure for the floor is a one-time expense, but it was to account for the additional amount over and above what we spent in 2010. And again, the cost for borrowing the money to build the parking lot expansion is a cost this year. It'll be a cost next year and the year after. I'm sorry, not this year, but it'll be a cost in 2011, 12, and 13, and then hopefully it'll be paid off. So it was just a way of showing how I got to the $224,000. Does that answer your question?
Carol.
Did you say yes? You've done an incredible job over, what did you say, 24 years? Of building to a point where we have not had to lay out the kind of money we used to have to keep an airport going. Do you foresee a time, you're going to hate me, do you foresee a time where there might be a net income that could come to the county? That's one question.
The answer to that is no, because the law is set up so that any profit you make at the airport has to be put back into the airport.
The law is set up? Ours or?
The federal regulations require that, because they are subsidizing the airport's operational capital expenses, that any time an airport makes money, it has to be spent at the airport.
And does that include concessions,
everything,
advertising,
right,
restaurant?
If we ever got to a point where natural gas drilling was approved in this county, and maybe I shouldn't
please
go there. Really.
Heaven forbid. And does the airport... as some other of our units, tourism comes to mind, pay any overhead to the county for keeping the books and implementing contracts? And
no.
Are we allowed to?
The airport is assessed an administrative fee that's reflected in the general fund unallocated revenues of approximately about $125,000. The airport also pays... for its debt service. So even though the county has about $6.7 million of annual debt service between solid waste and the airport, it reduces it down to about $4.7 million local. So the airport is, when it's able, pays its bills to the general fund.
How much does it cost us to, do the risk management and the contracts and the bookkeeping? What does it cost us?
We haven't updated the figure, but it was about 5 years ago. It was based upon our cost allocation plan, the percentage of their budget.
Okay.
And it came
and
up to over $100,000.
Last question is, if you were done, I do remember when the restaurant first opened, and I happened to work for another entity up on Brown Road, the restaurant issued, it was made up in the same management, issued sort of a discount coupon to walk over to the airport and eat lunch to help get that going. Is that still going, and could it be?
It could. There's a different contract now, so. But we could certainly resurrect that. I certainly talked to the person about doing that.
Something that we could do for our employees, maybe,
yeah,
and others.
Any other questions about the library or the airport, which is not an enterprise operation, by the way?
No.
Definitely not.
Dooley.
On page 5 of our budget book, that's where the administration and overhead of $125,000 that was David just mentioned appears. But also down near the bottom of that page, there's something called Public Works Administration, and there's something called Interdepartmental Charge, and I wonder if you could speak about those.
Well, the charge for Public Works is similar to the $125,000. It's that's another part of what the airport pays the county for services rendered. So it is actually more than 125. It's more than 100. It's about 160 something.
Those two together, and the interdepartmental charge.
I'm not sure. I think that's something to do with training, or I'm not sure what that is.
I just wonder what they are.
Can we get back to you on that?
Sure.
Okay. Any other questions? Joe?
Can I just... I didn't give Brian the right answer on a question that he asked about fringe benefits. I misunderstood your question. I thought it related to the bottom line. You are correct in saying that the growth in fringe benefits is roughly 30%. I've got it around 27%. So in terms of being able to look at this budget and say fringes are growing by almost 30%, is that the rule? And that's basically how much fringe benefits overall are growing in this budget.
Really?
Any other questions for Bob? Thank you very much, Bob. And
Jim?
Yes, Jim.
Before we go to the next one, can I make a correction on the clerk's slideshow? And this may have provoked some of the questions that came up about local. On that slide that has a table, and I talked to Maureen about this and she agrees, a table that shows 2010 and then 2011 costs and a bottom line increase of 18%, those numbers in the 2010 column are not correct. And they differ from what's in the budget. And let me tell you where. The target number under 2010 should read 1,215,618, which would then bring that bottom line down to 362,903 under total and fiscal target, which is $50,000 higher than you see. And when you look at your budget book, if you took the time to add all those numbers, that's what you would find, 362,903, which means that the increase from year to year in the clerk's budget is not 18%, it is 1.7%. Or $6,300. So I did want to get that on the record that was there needs to be a correction on that presentation slide.
Great, thank you. Martha?
So across the target row on the top,
yeah.
What's the percentage increase?
I didn't do it.
I'll see.
I can.
Okay, so we should recalculate all those?
Yeah.
Okay.
Thanks, Joe. Any other comments or questions for Joe about this thing? Okay, solid waste. Barbara.
Barb, find a microphone.
You want to use a stand?
Is that on now? Yeah. Okay. Just quickly, to review our mission, which we developed with our original solid waste 20-year plan in 1991, which we're coming to the end of. Our mission is to manage the solid waste of Tompkins County in a manner that is environmentally sound, cost-effective, socially responsible, and safe. And as you all mostly know, we've been accomplishing this through coordinated operational, educational, and administrative programs in waste reduction, reuse, recycling, composting, and of course whatever's left over, it would be thrown away. When I first came here 24 years ago, we were just simply operating a landfill, And now we're to a point where we've reduced the overall solid waste from disposal in this county by 60% at a cost less than the cost of disposal. So going along the lines of previous presentations, our budget next year is at a 2% increase of that dollar amount. Two-thirds of it represents an increase in fringes. And our FTE is being reduced by half a person. You can ask me questions about that later. Just one other thing. Just so you know, about 15% of my budget is actually staff and fringes. The rest have to do with contractual relationships with nonprofits and the private sector, as well as various pieces of equipment and things of that sort to operate, which is very different than most county budgets. Of our total expenditures, roughly speaking, two-thirds are related to the two main operations, recycling and disposal. Recycling is, of course, the collection for residents, the processing, and the disposal, of course, is the loading of the garbage onto trucks and hauled to and out of county landfill. As you probably know if you've been here a while, the debt service for our budget is over $1 million, which has to do with building the new recycling center, closing old landfills, and the money we spent to try to site a landfill that turned out not to be economical. Other programs include reuse, food waste and yard waste, composting, administration, and other waste reduction and educational programs. Again, one of the important things for you to look at as we talk about this budget is that, as in previous years, when we've tried to keep fees constant, we have a fund balance of our own. This is not the county's fund balance. And we keep a 10% fund balance. As you know from talking with me last year, we, due to the economic distress, we saw a great decrease in the revenue from the sale of recyclables. This year, we will be dipping into the fund balance, but we will be incurring excess revenues, and we will be saving money in our budget in excess of this amount, probably in the neighborhood of $325,000, $350,000 to maintain a fund balance well over 10%. Just again on the revenue side of things, I just talked to you about the use of the fund balance, the annual fee which pays for non-disposal costs in our program, makes up 47% of our revenue. Disposal fees at the gate or through the trash tags make up another 32%. We have miscellaneous revenues. That includes grants that we get from the state and federal government, as well as fines for illegal dumping and other miscellaneous charges. The recycling revenue that we've anticipated in this budget will make up approximately 7% of the revenue. That is a very, very conservative number. And the reason that I've been very conservative is that we're going to be entering into a new contract. And as I was developing this budget, we had not finished our negotiations. That number should be well in excess of that amount. Questions had come up at the last legislative meeting while I was at home watching, and I think that Frankie's gotten the update on revenues from me, I believe. But just to give you all a picture of what happened, this is dollars per ton of recyclables, and roughly speaking, we're at about 12,500, 13,000 tons of material. You can see over the last few years, we've been hovering around $100 per ton average. Then, of course, we ran into economic distress. What happens in a poor economy is people don't buy things. Cardboard isn't generated. Newspaper was also on the decline in paper in general. What happens to the sale of corn happens to the sale of recyclables, et cetera. But, of course, the good news this year is that we, like I said to you, we're going to exceed our projections by about $200,000 to $250,000, and that's all good news. And that should stay steady for quite a while. Now I'm going to talk to you. So I've talked to you about expenditures. I've talked to you about revenues. The proposal for next year is to continue the annual fee for residents at $56 per household per year. And there are quite a few other entities that we have in our resolution when we approve the fee, but just so you know, colleges and schools, which we have a negotiated some percentage, some for next year, will go up slightly due to an increase in recycling tonnage. And our disposal fee, again, as you know, we have a separate fee for coupons, punch cards for our residential vehicles at the drop-off center. The overall disposal fee will stay at $80 per ton. That's the cost of loading the material and hauling and disposal to a nearby out-of-county landfill. Cars will continue at $8 per coupon, filling up your vehicle. The SUV minivan category, we do an awful lot of analysis in my office and found that there was quite a bit more that people were putting in those vehicles than the $12. So that will go up to $14. Punch cards, you can come in any vehicle and dispose of bags, cans. That's an incentive to reduce what you throw away. Yard waste, this was a source of controversy. For the first time, we charged for yard waste last year. The main reason we charged for it is because when we were looking at losing $400,000 in revenue, we had to make up that revenue. The cost is actually about $80 a ton to deliver that material to the composting and pay the composting charge. Next year, we're reducing that fee as a result of supporting it through partly through the annual fee. Cars, SUVs, minivans, residential, that will be free. All right. One of the things that we measure in solid waste is what is our success rate based on our planning to divert material from landfilling. That takes the form of recycling, composting, reuse, waste reduction, etc. And what this graph shows is what our diversion percentage is per staff person. The higher the bar, the better. And we've gone from, 12 staff people. 2015 will be 14 and a half. This next year is 14 and a half, but 2010 was 15. So we're at a point, just to tell you what this really means, where we need to make some changes in order to increase our waste diversion to go from 60% to 70%, 75%, excuse me. And that's going to come in the form of the new contract that we've been negotiating for recycling, increasing food waste composting, both for residents as well as the businesses and many other programs, all which cost quite a bit less than the cost of throwing things away. So 2015 is basically a plan to reduce the waste by 75%, and we will be seeing a reduction in staff at that time as well. So my goals: achieve 75% waste diversion by 2015, substantially increase recycling revenue through a new contract that Jonathan and I will be bringing forward publicly at the next legislative meeting. The new contract will greatly reduce our capital costs from that 17% debt service that we're currently paying, so that when we retire that debt after 2014, the new contract will not carry that kind of debt. We will be receiving grant money for it, and we should be in much better shape that way. We will continue to maintain a 10% fund balance, and over the course of the next 5 years, you will see a much better site plan and much more efficient and thorough services for recycling, and we will talk about that more next time. Any questions for today?
Julie.
Several places in the budget, there is revenue from bin sales, and some of it is under one program and some of it is under another, but they're all the same bins, aren't they?
No.
Okay,
it depends on the bin. Yeah.
Tell me.
In the recycling budget is the sale of the recycling bins, and in the waste reduction budget is the sale of the composting bins for households.
Okay. Thank you.
Peter, and then Will.
A couple of questions of things I couldn't follow.
Sure.
In a number of places in the denominator was coupon. I didn't know what that meant.
Oh.
Something per coupon.
Yeah, we were talking. There you are. Let's go back.
There was a
new law a few years ago where the state required us only to weigh 1,000 pounds or greater. We had to set up certain types of flat rate fees. So what this is about simply is if you want to throw things away but you don't want to use a hauler at the curb, you can buy coupons, little tickets, so that you can throw away your trash.
And you can throw away as much as you want with that?
You can fill your vehicle.
Okay, that's number one. And number two, percentages. When I buy milk that's 2% milk, it means that in 100 pounds of milk, there's 2 pounds of fat. That's what 2% means.
Mm-hmm.
And I could not for the life of me figure out what 75%
all right.
waste dispersion.
So what that means is, that's an excellent question. So what you do is you take the amount of material in tons that isn't going to go to a landfill. So the amount that's recycled, the amount that's composted, and the amount that is minimized. And that's your numerator. And in your denominator, it's the amount of trash plus the amount that's diverted.
Okay.
And that's in a snapshot in time.
Anyone else? Mike, Will, Carol.
The disposal fee for yard waste, I don't totally understand. Can you explain the theory of wanting to reduce the disposal fee and shift it to the annual fee?
Well, in the past, the entire cost was on the annual fee. Okay.
Yeah, but what's the theory about shifting it back?
Last year, we needed to because part of it is what happens at our recycling center, and the other part of it is what happens at an outside location. And what I want to do is to be able to make sure people understand that there is a cost of bringing the stuff to our location and handling, but it's a lower cost than the cost of disposal, basically. So there's a there's a fixed component and there's a variable component, and the variable component would be the per ton fee, and the fixed component of doing business would be on as part of the annual fee.
What I'm trying to get at is it the theory of lowering that charge to try to encourage more to come into the facility?
Well, we're lowering the charge because there was a lot of resentment on the part of haulers, the city of Ithaca, and others that they had to haul this material all the way to the compost center in Trumansburg. And it's a balancing act between how much we can handle at our facility versus what we can't.
So it's the theory of the charge, then, is to try to better control the amount that comes in.
That's correct.
Okay.
Thank you.
Will?
Thank you. We have, over the
past couple of years, talked a lot about the problem of waste trucks coming up from downstate, driving through our community on their way up to Seneca Meadows. But we presumably generate a few of those trucks ourselves. And I'm curious how many currently and how this is likely to change if we go with a new contract. Am I right that there will actually be more trucks going out?
Yeah, generally speaking, we're talking about a few trucks a day, depending on the day, anywhere between 3 and 5 trucks total.
Okay.
And as we reduce the amount of waste that we throw away, there are going to be less of those.
But if we're sending away for processing, will that not increase also the number of trucks?
I'm not clear.
If we do the recycling...
Oh, if some of the recyclables wind up going elsewhere...
Well, most of them will go elsewhere for profit.
You know, it really won't change, and the reason it won't is because it's the same amount of stuff that's leaving our county in trucks, in large trucks anyway, whether it's going to market or whether it's going to another facility.
Carol.
Yeah, I'm noticing in the throughout the main part of your budget, there's places where there are interfund transfers and fees, and you don't need to go through them individually.
I'll summarize.
I'm trying to understand. You heard me ask the airport whether we're charging them overhead or fees. Are we charging you?
I already pay for a number of departments in terms of services that are rendered. And that, roughly speaking, it's about $120,000 in next year's budget. So there's about 5 departments that I provide funds to.
Are there highlights you want
to? Sure. I provide funds to the attorney's office, the finance office. Public works in the past, assessment. All related to administering our fees or working on special programs. For example, with the attorney, in the past when we issued a request for proposals for the private sector, I believe we paid $250,000 to a private a company, as well as a consultant. This time around, it was primarily Jonathan and I. We pay, finance to administer the annual fee. It all makes sense.
And then do you have a handle on how much you save us by not having to landfill the waste that
sure,
would be generated?
The avoided cost?
Yeah.
Yes.
Did you give us that already? Or?
No. It's actually a more complicated answer than just a quick number, but I can certainly do that.
Well, you can get back to her.
It's okay. Yeah.
Oh, I'll just respond back to Joe.
Thanks.
It's a good chunk of money, actually.
Any other questions for Solid Waste? Dooley?
The depot fees, that's the household hazardous waste days.
Yes.
And that's 6 a year?
Yes.
And it's going to cost less this year, you think?
Or in 2011? It's a reallocation of staff time. What I've done is the individual that works on administering that contract is working more on old landfill monitoring so that we can use less consulting time. And we're still getting a grant as well for 50%. When we get the money is a whole other matter.
Joe, you had your hand up.
Yeah, just on a technical point, the very bottom line in Barb's budget on page 263 is labeled total county cost. And in most cases, when you look at that, that's the local dollar cost. In Barb's budget, it's not. It's really the draw on fund balance that's described in her slideshow. So you see a total county cost in 2011 of $296,988. That's really the portion of her budget that she will draw out of her own reserves, out of solid waste reserves, to cover. So don't read that as a property tax or county cost that's coming from this fund.
Matter of fact, we're going to see some good news there. I just found out we finally got our 2002-2007 grant award from the state for recycling education in the amount of $365,000. Hopefully we'll get that money this year and we can replenish the fund balance with money that's already been spent.
Okay, great. Any other?
Yeah. No, I'm not following it. So Is your over-target request an over-target request, or it's not really an over-target?
No, not really.
Every year, this is a part of our custom. Every year, if solid waste wants to draw money out of its reserves, it puts the question to you in the form of an OTR. So that's why you see an OTR that I've recommended that we draw it out of reserves, but it's subject to your approval.
Okay, and then the last year you talked to us about the change, concerns about the change in the national and international market for what we get for recycling. Where do you see that going now?
It's the graph I showed you that showed that we had a blip and then it went up. Markets are good right now, very good. And they're actually going to continue to be, and we're going to be doing a whole lot more in terms of selling high-grade paper, which is something we'll explain at the next session on the Recycling Center, so our revenues are going to be even better.
Thank you, Peter. Hold on, Barb.
Every year we ask to have money taken from the reserves to give to, is it like the bottomless wine glass?
No, but when there is a request to draw from reserves, it's put in the form of an OTR in this budget.
And how does it get filled?
I either spend less or I make more.
Oh, okay. Revenue. All right. Thank you.
Hearing no other questions, we are
so
Barb, we are finished. Thank you so much for being here. And we appreciate your time, and also you, Ed, for being here. Tomorrow night at 7 o'clock, we have a ledge meeting, one item. Peter, is your committee meeting tomorrow at 3?
Yes.
Okay. Are there any questions for me, Joe, or Kevin? Frank?
Yeah, I just want to make sure I understood. And it goes back to something Martha asked at the beginning, because I was kind of expecting it too. Are we going to have a little preamble tomorrow about fund balances and the general overview?
Yeah, if you'd like that to happen tomorrow, it will happen tomorrow.
Yeah, yes. I think that'd be a good idea. Thanks.
Martha?
Thank you for dinner, Mr. Dennis. And there are a couple of the slide, I guess this is for Kevin. There are a couple of these that when they get printed, the type is, it's all too dark. Is that in the future you can adjust those?
I pushed the button a little too soon. That's all. Sorry.
Thanks.
Carol?
Did you give us a recommended amount that you'd like
no,
us
I
to
did not
for
do that.
Future
well,
meals?
Well.
Well, it's related, but Kevin, are these PowerPoints going to be put on the website so they'll show up in color?
I can work that out. Yeah.
That'd be good. And thank you. And Jim, I don't know if we decided we wanted to do the fund as opposed to.
Well, that's what I was going to come up with here. I mean, Will had made a suggestion that literally individual legislators might get together or with others and prepare food and bring it in for the group, or as we could do as we have done in the past. We all kick and throw in some money in, and the staff will order something for us. However you want to go is fine with me. Do I have any? Will?
Yeah, I'll just pitch it one more time, and if people don't like it. My idea was that we would take turns, instead of kicking in a fund and having our overworked clerical staff go out and get food, my suggestion was that we rotate that responsibility. We could do was done tonight. You could order pizza in and just pay for it one night. You could, if you are more ambitious, make something and bring it. It could be as cheap or as expensive as your budget allowed, but between 15 of us, if even 8 or 10 of us did it, we would have this covered. That was my suggestion. I would be more than happy to do one night.
Carol?
I'd like to suggest that our eating styles and our talents are probably as varied as our politics, and that some of us have greater talents in the cooking area and in the carrying of food area, and that we leave it up to our discretion, but that we each do something.
How many people want? We'll do a food poll.
How many people want to throw in money and do it that way? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12. And how many don't? Too bad you lose. Okay. Martha.
Except that I don't think the staff should pay.
What?
I don't think the staff. The staff was raising their hands. I don't think they should pay.
No.
Oh. Well, yeah. So, I don't know. What's a number? Pick a number.
5.
No, not big enough. 20. Okay, we'll do 20 from everyone.
So who's collecting this?
Okay. So who do you think that?
Oh, Kathy. Yeah. Kathy knows.
Jim will collect it if you don't have these more trustworthy.
Yeah. What questions?
I want to say if anybody wants to stick around after the meeting and they have questions about the budget or understanding how the budget reads, I'll be here for a little while, so come ask me. Thanks.
What are you suggesting that we get? We're going to have some of this pizza left over, right? And then
the wraps.
You like the wrap. Okay. We'll try to do the wrap.
Yeah, but not always the
wrap. We'll have veggie wraps and meat wraps. Is that okay?
And then whatever Will decides to bring in.
Yeah. All right. Okay. And the staff actually is it like a big deal?
No. Move it adjournment.
Is there a second? All in favor?
Aye.
Thanks so much. Very good job.